state laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or child care, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bansoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. Here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, where we just defeated St. John's in baseball, so there. Also, by the way, you can listen to WUSB online anytime over the internet, WUSB.FM. It's now 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, which can only mean one thing. It's time for Off the Wall. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined by Kyle.
Yo, what's
fresh,
up?
Fresh off Stony Brook's victory in baseball. It's a good way to start the season, I think.
Yeah, very seasonable game.
Because it's warm outside. It's spring. You know, I know they've played a couple of games already, but it's spring, and I feel like...
Perfect weather for that kind of game.
There's no hope for snow anymore, so I've made my peace with that.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's good to make your peace.
And you know it's spring when fires start, and fires did start here on Long Island a few days ago. It's kind of different here. We don't get fires like they do in the other parts of the country where, you know, all kinds of massive destruction. We get, you know, kind of small ones, but they could, you know, turn into big ones. In the Pine Barrens, of course, fires are kind of normal for seeding and things like that. That doesn't mean fires should be set or anything like that, but they are a natural occurrence. I don't know if that's the case here, but actually, you know what? I don't think it was the case here because the story I just saw says that the fire in West Hampton was believed to have been sparked by embers from a family attempting to make s'mores on Saturday morning out in Manorville, in their Manorville backyard. Wow, okay. Police had assigned 25 detectives along with arson investigators to search for the origin of the fires. 25 detectives, imagine that. You've lit some s'mores, and they're all looking to find out what happened. Yeah, a family living... Why give their address? Newsday, why are you giving their... Okay, a family living somewhere out there. I mean, really. They've been trying to make the gooey snack at 9:30 a.m. Who makes s'mores at 9:30 in the morning?
That's something they should reflect upon deeply.
Should there be an intervention or something? Because that's... I mean, I guess, okay, maybe you're watching Saturday morning cartoons and it gets out of hand. I don't know, but I've never had, honestly, I didn't grow up on s'mores, so I don't understand the culture.
Well, maybe they had like sort of a weekend camping thing going on.
It was a backyard.
Well, yeah, like it was such nice weather that they were like out under the stars and, you know, just kept the whole thing going.
9:30 a.m. Saturday.
Someone was insisting that...
You're blaming kids, aren't you? You're blaming toddlers that
you
were
said it. I
putting,
didn't say it.
Putting their foot down. Okay, well, whatever. Okay, so they had tried to make s'mores outside. The story gets better. They gave up. For some reason, they couldn't do it. You know why? You know why they couldn't do it? Because it was so damn windy. The fire probably kept going out, except that the fire didn't really go out, or at least an ember didn't go out. So they went back inside after attempting to light some cardboard. Unbeknownst to them, the fire did eventually ignite, and the family was completely unaware. And by the time they were aware, it was a full-blown fire. And that's when the Santa Mauritius Fire Department took interest, and they came by to put it out. Unfortunately, some of it had probably escaped already. Who is this describing fire in this way? It's Police Commissioner Kevin Catalina says some of it... probably escaped. I didn't know fire could escape, but yeah, I guess why not? Efforts by Newsday to locate the family on Monday were not successful. You gave out their address, Newsday. I mean, everybody can locate them now, thanks to you, but yet you can't find them. Suffolk police did not respond to questions about how the family was cooking the s'mores. Okay, I'm not sure what kind of answer would satisfy people. How were they cooking the s'mores? I mean, what recipe were they using? Or how in their how they could be in their right mind? Or okay. Anyway, so that's where one of them came from. All right, enough about that story. Hey, we had a fun little adventure. We had to rent a car because our main car got broken. And, so, you know, moment's notice, we have to be somewhere over the weekend. So gotta have a car. So last minute, I was able to rent something and, it's great to be able to do that, just to be able to have a car you don't have to worry about. But the funny thing is, we were in touch with the mechanic for the other car and that car was not going to be fixed until Monday. Right after getting the rental car, driving down the street with it, literally 5 minutes from getting it, the mechanic called and said, you know, we've been working all day on this to get it to you by the end of the day, and it's ready now. So that is something that, but you know, we had fun with it. It was really good having it in the first place. The fun part happened at the end when we returned it and confused the hell out of them because they were looking at the mileage, and they said, this isn't right. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you know, what we do sometimes, actually what we do whenever we can, is go into the settings, because all cars now have settings, and we change various settings, because you can do that. You can change miles to kilometers. You can change the clock from 12-hour to 24-hour, and sometimes we forget to change it back. But, you know, who's to say what's right and what's wrong, especially in these difficult times where, you know, we're battling with Canada you know, we kind of feel compelled to do it their way for a while. So, yeah, you know, we did miles to kilometers, and it's kind of cool because you have these speedometers on the cars, and they just change. They change from you know, a circular mile per hour diagram to kilometers. So there you are driving on the highway, and it looks like you're doing 100 miles an hour, but you're actually doing closer to 60 because you're doing 100 kilometers an hour. Anyway, so when we returned the thing, they wrote down the mileage. And, of course, the mileage had also changed from miles to kilometers, meaning it was much higher. And, you know, I didn't realize at first what was going on, but I overheard some of the conversation saying that these guys put on 16,000 miles in 2 days. yeah. And that's when I realized, oh, yeah, I didn't change it back, did I? We told them. It was very funny, and everybody's fine now. But, yeah, you can do that. And, you know, if you have a regular car that's not a rental car, you can do that too. And why not? You know, why not learn Celsius? Why not learn kilometers? Why not learn a 24-hour clock like the rest of the world does? Because, you know, in this day and age where we're fighting the rest of the world, maybe take a look at the other side, see what it's all about. Okay, so today, what do we have? We have Trump attacking Canada on multiple fronts. Yeah, you know, this is, like Trudeau said, this is the dumbest fight ever. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Today, the threats went beyond imposing more tariffs. Okay, to keep up, the tariffs increased to 50% today. Then they went back down to 25%. It's like, you know, nobody knows, or Trump certainly doesn't know what he's doing from one moment to the next. But now he has laid out in the clearest terms yet, and, you know, again, it's Trump, so I don't know how clear it can be, his vision for annexing Canada and making it part of the United States. Trump has made repeated comments about Canada becoming America's 51st state since winning the election in November, and last month specifically told the country's departing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who is no longer the Prime Minister, that he did not believe the border treaty between the two nations was valid. He does not believe the border treaty between our two countries that's been there forever. He does not believe it's valid. So today he announced his intention to double his planned tariffs, and then he detailed much of his thinking. Take it for what it's worth. The only thing that makes sense is for Canada to become our cherished 51st state. First of all, even if you buy into that, that doesn't make any sense because Canada has what, 10 provinces? Each one of those should be a state. So, yeah, you know what? 51 through 60. Good luck with elections in the future if you do that. Canadian taxes will be very substantially reduced. They will be more secure militarily and otherwise than ever before. There would no longer be a northern border problem, which I didn't know there was a northern border problem. He basically said again, the artificial line of separation drawn many years ago will finally disappear. Notice how the northern border is artificial. The southern border, you need a wall for that. You know, it's insane. He also said, "Oh Canada, the national anthem will continue to play, but now representing a great and powerful state within the greatest nation that the world has ever seen." Yeah, you know, we joke about this here. We laugh heartily because it's so ridiculous. I can't imagine, or actually I can because I do watch a bunch of Canadian TV, but I can't imagine how it feels up there. You know, how people are reacting to this attack out of nowhere. But what you have to realize, and this is coming from the heart of actual individual people here. This is insane. We have no intention of taking over Canada. We don't want to do that. And we're sorry, to take a phrase from Canada. We are sorry that this is happening. No matter what he does, no matter what he says, he is not going to have the support that he needs to pull anything like this off. It's a joke. Just like he is a joke. And, you know, to look around at the chaos that's happening right now, stock market plunging every day, diseases running rampant, a recession in the future, he's even admitting it now. All the things that we were warned about, they're all coming true. He can't last. He can't last in this kind of environment. Even his own people are starting to turn against him. By that, I mean people who voted for him. The elected officials, they don't have a spine. So they're going to keep doing whatever he tells them to do. But they're irrelevant. What matters are the people. And when they turn, that's when things will change. We're starting to see that. It's not nearly as fast as I would like it to be. But it is starting to happen. And the more crazy and outrageous this gets, the faster change for the better will come. Just know we're with you up there. And it's crazy. It's insane. I can tell from your expression, Kyle, you agree.
Well, right. I have, like, very little else to add. It's just so absurd, and I'm disgusted with it. Like, I just think it's a waste, and I'm kind of not interested in, like, talking. I'm about action. Like, I've talked, I've been, like, a part of this conversation. We share, we try to, like, propose the right kinds of ideas, things that are kind of considerate of all of that, but it's like, it's not that fun.
Absolutely not.
Like, I talking about absurd things like this, like the border problem going away, like there will still be a border. It'll just be open, like completely open. So all of the crossings and things that are being cited as a problem now will just be totally, free moving, like, across that border.
But what's the problem?
It doesn't make sense. Like, it's just illogical the way it's being presented. And, of course, the people there have a sense of identity apart from ours. And the lack of self-awareness in characterizing this as something they would want, they don't. They want their independence, their sovereignty, and a good neighbor in us, not us as a conquering nation state.
Right.
I mean, what's going to happen to the flags?
Well, that's the least of it.
It's just all of the ways you try to take this on, it just doesn't comport with what is well understood around the world. And it's this very, very peculiar insular worldview that we're basically being primed and expected to accept. I just don't want to talk. I love talking and I love sharing about it. I don't know that my contributions are really moving the needle. Like, it's a cool thought experiment. I love the dozens, like, going in on, you know, making fun of this stuff. But I'm at a point where I can only, like, work on so many things that I am passionate about and care about. And, you know, I have a life too. I have things that are a part of my growth that I have to put energy into, and people that are counting on me, people that I care about. And I don't care about people lying and trying to feed me lies. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how I get down. I'm a truthful person. I like people that are honest with me. And that's, I think, the Canadian expectation of us as a neighbor, is that we're truthful and honest trading partners and stick up for the sorts of values that we have at least alleged to support. And my voice is so diluted in all of this. Diluted.
I think that's part of the tactic, though, is to exhaust us so that we don't have the energy to even speak out against the crap that they're trying to pull. I'm thinking of the people in Canada. I'm thinking of our listeners in Canada. I know we have a lot of listeners in Canada. I just want to convey the message that this is not who we are. And it's not going to be who we are for much longer if things keep going the way they're going. And, I truly hope that is the case. This is absurd. This is ridiculous. This is crazy, insane, destructive. And, you know, I just think of all the times we've been to Canada, exploring the place, seeing its incredible diversity. I know that's a dirty word here now, but every single province has its own uniqueness to it. I would say more so than many of our states, which kind of blend together. You tell me the difference between North Dakota and South Dakota. I mean, I don't really know what it is, but I can sure tell you the difference between, you know, Quebec and Ontario or Newfoundland and Nova Scotia. You know, it's an incredible place. It's filled with all sorts of history and culture and just kindness. It is an amazing place. And if you've never been to Canada, please, it's next door, for God's sake. It's an amazing, and when you're there too, you realize, hey, I'm in a country where I can understand what people are saying for the most part, and, you know, feel kind of like I'm at home, but not have to deal with the nonsense, you know, either internationally or domestically, and a lot more gets done. So, again, Canada, we're sorry. It's crazy. Let's think of more things we can do together as people and leave the idiots out of it. Because this is just annoying as hell. I get what you're saying, Kyle.
What's being done in our name? It just does. It's counter to most of what people believe. I don't know. I have so many ways of thinking about this. I'm trying to be like, you know, calm and conversational and super fun here on WSB Stony Brook, but it's taxing. You know, it's like a terrifying, yeah.
Oh wow.
It's like a waking night terror of misrepresentation of how most people view another nation, a nation to the north that is, like you've pointed out, a delightful place to travel and full of its own wonders. Why we need this, why we need to emphasize this as a nation, it's so absurd. Mm-hmm. It's just if it is a tactic, like, okay, so, yeah, maybe it's working badly, however badly, I hope ever more bad and just in disorganized ways, but only so that it goes away sooner.
Well, the thing is, you know, in any war, and this is a war because, you know, our very lives are being attacked, our very traditions and benefits, all kinds of things are being ruthlessly attacked. People are losing their jobs. It's a horrible situation right now. But in any one of those types of battles, you win by hitting your enemy on multiple fronts. And, you know, there is no doubt that is the enemy, the people who are doing this kind of thing, attacking our allies and just making the world a much worse place. So whatever we can do to weaken them is a good thing. And the more people that realize that and who are actively trying to defeat whatever nonsense they're trying to pass this week or change this week, I just think it will be effective. It will definitely be effective. Now, one thing, you know, I really like to do things like learn more about different cultures, and especially when Canada is being attacked like this, learning more about Canada. And you might have heard at the beginning of the show, those were the opening notes to O Canada. I'm going to play it here. And you would hear that sound on a shortwave radio playing over and over and over again, kind of like we did at the top of the hour while we were going up to 6 o'clock. That's called an interval signal. That was what Radio Canada International would use when basically doing the same thing, you know, making sure that the time matched up, and at the top of the hour, you'd hear the news, just like with almost every other shortwave radio station. But it also served as a way, if you were tuning a shortwave station anywhere in the world and you heard that repeating, you would know you were listening to Radio Canada International, and they might be speaking English, they might be speaking French, they might be speaking Swahili. You don't know what they're going to speak at the top of the hour, but you are listening to the voice of Canada. That's not what they call, but their voice. And that's how shortwave works. So that's one little way that we're kind of sharing some culture from the past and from Canada.
Yeah, we like doing that. We like emphasizing, like, stuff that's around us that interests us. And I don't need to be, I don't have the answer to this. Like, this is not a campaign. This 51st state nonsense is not a campaign I'm with. And I don't really care to be right or have the answer or get kind of bogged down in defending why I think this is totally anathema to, it's just the wrong path. It's not something I want to have the correct answer on. It doesn't make sense on any level to me. So I'm not really going to be able to like advocate that well. And I don't really care. I don't really care to be right. I don't really care to be, guiding anybody on this or like, you know, maintain a nice big long in-depth discussion to like lay it all out for you because it's bonkers. It just makes no sense. So save it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to like, you know, yeah, write your Congress people, write someone who matters out there.
Call them, visit them. You know, we're happy to provide you with the information you need to do that.
We talk all along, like as much as we can about this stuff, about how great these places are, and that's as much as we can do. And
call and visit too. We can do all kinds of other things as well. But
yeah,
yes.
I'm just more keen to see the action. Like, I don't want to get in the discussion. I don't want to convince anybody. I don't care.
Well, you do care, but I get it. I understand what you're saying.
No, I don't care about being the one to change everybody's mind.
There's nobody arguing, Kyle. Everybody knows this is crazy. Only Trump and his ilk are the ones pushing this nonsense. Everybody, right or left, knows it's insane. And, you know, hopefully this is something that brings us together a little bit so we can make sure none of this happens. And as I'm talking, I'm reading yet another attack that the U.S. is launching against Canada. We're going to begin enforcing a law. Apparently the law already exists, but we're going to begin enforcing it, requiring Canadians visiting the United States for 30 days or more to register with the authorities. I can't believe I'm reading these words. Yes, you must register with the authorities and see if your papers are in order. The new requirement is rooted in existing immigration law, which states that foreign nationals 14 or older and not already registered with American authorities have to register and be fingerprinted if they plan to be in the United States for 30 days or longer. Now, in practice, that rule has not been applied to Canadian nationals crossing into the United States via land borders, but now apparently, we need to do that. And, you know, Mexico, too. Mexico has always been kind of unique in that you could just walk into Mexico. There's like a turnstile at the Tijuana border. You just walk in. It goes around like you're entering a subway station, and you're in Mexico, and that's it. Not only do you have to show a passport, you have to have a visa, and you have to pay to get into Mexico. So Mexico's making it. You know, I'm seeing these Americans complaining. Oh, we just wanted to go to the pharmacy and get cheap drugs, and our trip is ruined because of Mexico. It's like, yeah, you know what? You're getting a slight taste of how we're treating the rest of the world. You don't even want to know how we treat Mexicans. But, expect reactions. Expect lots of reactions to our actions, and rightfully so. All right. What else is going on? Let's stay local for a second. If you're going to town board meetings in Riverhead, guess what's no longer allowed? Signs.
Yeah.
You can't bring colorful signs with catchy slogans. You're going to have to leave them at the door. The town board has approved new rules for its biweekly meetings that ban signs and posters and cut down on the amount of time the public has to address the five-member body. Residents criticized the board's ban, saying it limits freedom of speech and dampens displays of opposition to controversial topics. Not everyone is comfortable speaking publicly, said Cindy Clifford, who is apparently comfortable speaking publicly to Newsday here. She is the president of the Heart of Riverhead Civic Association. People may have strong opinions, but are too shy to speak from the podium, she said. Holding up a sign is how they'll know that you see where they stand and what they want or don't want. That's something sending a letter won't accomplish. There's all kinds of hot button issues from warehouses in Calverton, a $40 million land deal at the Enterprise Park at Calverton, to the prospect of luxury inns on 2nd Avenue, which is not in Calverton. They often draw a crowd, and attendees hold up signs. And we're just talking about holding up signs, not even chanting, or anything that could be considered disruptive. Just, Yeah, they don't want to see your signs. They don't want to see where you're coming from. This is the kind of thing that's getting more and more common, where your speech is being quelled in one way or another. Nothing compares to what I've read recently, early in the month, concerning Columbia University. The headline reads, "Facing Trump's threats, Columbia investigates students critical of Israel." Yeah, critical of Israel, and the university will investigate you. This is scary. This is completely insane. Now, in recent weeks, Columbia University has sent notices to dozens of students for activities ranging from sharing social media posts in support of Palestinian people to joining unauthorized protests. I can't believe I have to say this to Columbia administration, but a protest by nature is unauthorized. That's what makes it a protest. You're protesting something that's not fair, usually the rules. And to do that, you break the rules. Okay? You don't ask for permission to protest.
Yeah, that's like a parade, right?
That's a parade permit. I mean, if you want to go down the street with costumes and balloons and things like that, fine. That's something else. But protest, you can have a protest anywhere, you know? You can have a sit-in right here. It's sure. Go ahead.
I'm about to.
All right.
I understand. I'm not joking.
All right. Well, go ahead. Sit on the floor.
All right. You know what? I'm going to move this.
You're going to move the microphone with you. Okay.
I'm bringing it.
Oh, thank you for moving the microphone.
Stop me?
No.
Stop me?
I'm powerless.
No.
But I will call the cops.
All right.
I will call law enforcement.
I'm taking over the floor.
Because
I'm sitting down right now.
Do you see how
it
works? This is democracy in action.
No. You can't silence me.
Actually, I can't. I can control the microphone. I can silence you. But,
all right.
No, but I respect
my demands.
Your right to express yourself. More than what Columbia University apparently does. Can you imagine? Don't criticize Israel. How about this, folks? Israel sucks, okay? They are doing terrible, terrible things. I think they're very, very bad. Now, you know, I'm not talking about citizens. I'm talking about government. I'm talking about policy. I'm talking about actions that have taken place over the last couple of years. The government of Israel has murdered 60,000 people. You know, it's insane. It is tantamount to terrorism. They have occupied a land for decades. They have made people miserable. They have done nothing to advance peace. They are no longer supporting a two-state solution. They're in bed with Trump and with Putin, by the way. They don't support a democracy in Syria. There's all kinds of things. I could go on for 25 minutes about this. I could, yeah. I made Kyle run out of the room. But it's you have the right to criticize anyone you wish. All right. And that includes Israel. They are not immune. They're not immune from justice. They're not immune from criticism. All right. Let's just get that clear from the start. And to say that you're going to investigate anyone who criticizes a foreign country. What the hell? I mean, it's, you know, what I see in the media constantly is labeling people who go to demonstrations, who speak out, as being pro-Hamas, which is the most insulting and ignorant thing you could possibly say. You know, if you are against what a regime does, it does not mean you are for a terrorist group that also is fighting them.
But it means why they say it, so there's an association.
Exactly. And that way you can say, well, you know, we're targeting these pro-Hamas people. Well, who's a pro-Hamas person? Anyone who criticizes Israel.
Yeah, so they have to say it that way so that the association's set, even if it's not true.
But this is something that so many of us seem to fall for. Democrats, Republicans, you name it.
Like clockwork. Yeah.
I stand behind Israel to defend the right of Israel to defend itself. Well, how about the right of Palestinians to defend themselves? Because, boy, they sure seem to have the right to do that. And, yeah, I'd love for Hamas not to be in existence at all. But for some reason, the United States is negotiating with them. Yeah, we don't negotiate with terrorists, but we seem to be doing it. What's that all about? You know, your little plan did not work so well. You know, they're still here. So clearly, you don't know what you're doing. And
haven't they created an entire generation of more Hamas as a result of all these actions?
The government of Israel is the biggest recruiter for Hamas that you could imagine, because every single child in Palestine now is going to join Hamas if there is a Hamas in the future.
Like, since October 7th, there's been interviews with people that have who left that area in Gaza, and they're talking about the things they've seen and how they're able to, like, use that network, or they're interested in that fight in as a to memorialize the suffering that the immediate recent suffering that they have experienced as a result of all of this. And where's the plan for that? How's that going to work? How do you change something so monumental in a young person's life? How are you going to remediate that in the future? Yeah. How are you going to build around that? It's so similar to what kinds of things took hold in our other conquests in Mesopotamia. Like it's this thing where when you try to find a solution militarily or use that to get your way, you end up with a lot of suffering and people that basically resent that as a negotiation or a tool to reach an agreement, because you're doing things to people at gunpoint or bulldozer point or whatever.
Right. You know, we condemn terrorism because it targets the innocent, targets the young, the children, you know, the mothers, the grandmothers, you know, people who have, you know, no basic way of defending themselves because they're civilians, you know, and that's what a terrorist does, is cause fear amongst the populace, and that's where they get their power from. And rather than approach a difficult situation from the tremendous advantage that they have, the Israeli government has chosen to act like terrorists themselves and simply wipe out entire families, entire villages, as if they were the ones committing terrorist acts against them. You know, it would appear that to the Israeli government, they're all the same. They're all subhuman. They all don't deserve one shred of mercy. And that is unacceptable. And criticizing that is not only something that should be permitted, it's something that should be expected. If we believe in anything our country supposedly stands for, you don't just tolerate that. You don't just let that happen. And the fact that this country does and continues to support Israel with more weapons that are used to kill people, innocent people, it's shameful. And it's shameful for Democrats or Republicans. You know, I know a lot of people. This is where I might diverge a little bit, but I know a lot of people were very angry at Biden for standing by Israel. Here's the thing. There were a number of people who didn't vote for Biden because he didn't stand by Israel enough. So no matter what he did, he was going to pay the price for it. And politically, him not standing by Israel would have been political suicide. Yeah, he lost the election anyway, but he certainly wouldn't have lost he certainly would have lost had he stood by Israel less. I'm not excusing it. I'm trying to understand it, because that's what politics is, unfortunately. And, you know, I imagine if he had been reelected, the policy would have changed significantly. At least I would have hoped so. I do know, and I think everybody knew, that having Trump come barreling in was not going to be good for Palestine or peace in the region. You know, we're talking about a Trump resort now in the Gaza Strip. Okay, you know, if you didn't vote for Biden and you let Trump take power, this is what you voted for, unfortunately. I know it's a tough choice, you know, but in our particular way, we don't have coalitions. You know, we don't have elections like they do in Europe and other parts of the world where, you know, a bunch of parties can get together and have a mandate that is impossible in this country. So you have to sometimes vote for people and things that you're really, really opposed to, because not doing that is so much worse. And, you know, I get it. I understand it. I know why some people couldn't bring themselves to do that. But this is where we are now. And that's one of the reasons why.
But don't students get to be wrong? Like,
of course students get to be wrong.
Even if they hold an opinion or click a like or do some kind of online solidarity or mm-hmm. read an article that affects them and they react and write a blog post about it, you can grow and change as a student, even an adult. And I faithful or not, you can believe in one faith and join another. I mean, people change. People are dynamic. And this, like, policy, I don't understand what it's fixing about their student body.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a student, this is where you make mistakes. This is where you try out different things. And opinions are one of those things. And, you know, we need to not be so strict on people that simply voicing an opinion is considered something you should be punished for. You know, certainly there's hate speech, there's you know, incitements to violence. Those are things that I think we've always drawn the line at. But, you know, when I went to college, right, my freshman year, I joined the Revolutionary Communist Youth Brigade because it sounded interesting. It sounded interesting. In fact, it was like a national thing at that point. I remember we took a bus out to Champaign-Urbana for the founding of some national group. And at the time, you know, it was fresh. It was different. It was exciting. Over time, I realized, boy, these people have no sense of humor whatsoever. And they're not getting anywhere, and their biggest enemies are other people that think like them. Yeah, so kind of like what we're seeing now, where people tend to focus on their allies as their enemies rather than the people who are opposed to what they stand for.
Yeah, it's like they're especially with an incredibly complex issue, they seek this sort of uniformity of it being cut and dry, and it's not so cut and dry. It is complex. It takes an understanding of a lot of history and a lot of relationships and stuff. And there's different attitudes of around the whole issue and what kind of answers, what will help the situation long term, short term. And it's just a huge red flag to have the singular mindset, the one way we have to think about this to be correct. No, it's not like that. You can't just derive some correct attitude. You can support people having diversity of thought and not being hateful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something you screen at to any degree. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know what college screening is like. It sounds like a background check, and I don't think that's what you necessarily have to do, but I guess if online posting is so indelible now that it is a part of your, like, academic resume, is like, what are your activities online, that may be more interesting to look at as an issue, like how much of our digital footprint becomes who we are in the context of matriculating or getting a certain job or a mm-hmm. position in public service at some point in your career. Those are very interesting, like, kind of wide open questions that span beyond an understanding of a particular situation or political feelings about it, religious or not, secular or not. So it just poses this thing of, like, well, you're with us or you're against us,
right,
even if you have a differing point of view. And that just is so, again, backwards for a academic environment where there are aspects. You can look at the whole issue, you can look at pieces and parts of the whole thing and really explore and grow. That's the point of being in school.
Well, I explored and I grew, and, you know, I grew out of those ideas, moved into other ideas, but I didn't have anybody standing over me saying, these ideas are forbidden, you can't do this, this makes you that. And, you know, by the same token, the students, too, were not passing judgment. I mean, maybe inside their heads they were, but, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, I had to be careful what I said or who I associated with. And that is a healthy college environment. And I've always felt that at Stony Brook. And maybe we can even have a reunion of the Revolutionary Communist Youth Brigade. Somehow I think most people don't want to remember those days. And I was only there for like a semester. It was, I got disenchanted pretty quickly. And I think
that's how you find out about what those groups are about.
I think I was purged. I'm not sure.
Were you a part of one
I'm a non-person or something.
Oh,
I forget how they phrased it, but yeah. So
didn't take the pledge.
I learned an awful lot, but that's the point of college, is to learn an awful lot. Whether it's, you know, working for a radio station, or, you know, taking courses, or, you know, having chemistry experiments that sometimes go awry. Anyway, getting back to Columbia University. So, they tried that out. They said, criticize Israel and we're going to investigate you. The Trump administration said that's not good enough, and they canceled $400 million in grants and contracts with Columbia because the Ivy League school failed to squelch anti-Semitism on campus.
Wait, so was that whole policy to appease some attitude that they knew this administration was going to have about the university?
I think just about everything we're reading these days is an attempt to appease this administration, yes.
So it wasn't actually some homegrown policy that, I mean, they had protests, they had actions in the last couple of years.
It could have been too, but I think they're really terrified.
Sort of a convenient thing to prop up. And he still, because they knew maybe that some of their sources of federal financing would be in jeopardy were they to ignore the sentiments coming out of this administration. Now, that's really just the shows emblematic of the kind of pressure that learning institutions and other institutions that have sort of mixed sources of income are under right now.
Well, according to Education Secretary Lyndon McMahon, who I don't understand why she even applied for that job or went through confirmation hearings, because she's trying to dismantle the education department. Again, another dumbass move, but let's sit back and see what happens. Universities must comply with all federal anti-discrimination laws if they are going to receive federal funding. For too long, Columbia has abandoned that obligation to Jewish students studying on its campus. You know, I hear this a lot. I hear that accusation that Jewish students are not, they don't feel safe on campus. But it's oftentimes very short on details other than that blanket statement. Okay, what are the specific examples? You hear a chant you don't like? You see protesters that you don't agree with? What exactly is it? I mean, I'm not saying that there is not anti-Semitism in many, many places, including in the federal government, but we have to be careful not to blanketly label any time there's dissent against a particular policy or regime that means the people who are behind that are ipso facto anti-Semites. I'd just like to see more details. Whenever this is brought up, it stops there. It's like, you didn't do enough. Okay, what didn't they do? Tell us specifically what they didn't do. Then action can be taken to make sure they do that. Because absolutely, nobody should feel unsafe. Nobody should feel like they're the targets of anti-Semitism. You know, there are instances, though, where people chant something that they don't realize is anti-Semitic, and other people say that's anti-Semitic. For instance, from the river to the sea, that chant, many people don't see it as an anti-Semitic chant. In fact, you know, people in Israel chant that for the other side. They want from the river to the sea. You know, words are weird. It's the intent behind them that needs to be scrutinized. And if you just blanketly label people as coming from one particular philosophy or standing for one particular thing when they don't necessarily sign on for that, you're opening yourself up to all kinds of injustice, and that's what I think is happening here. So $400 million out the window because Columbia didn't bow down far enough to Trump. And now we have the latest development, which is the arrest of a pro-Palestinian demonstrator named Mahmoud Khalil in this country legally, had a green card, and now the Trump administration is trying to deport him because he's protesting for his people, you know? Now, okay, I'm about to really blow your mind here, because you'll never guess who came to his defense. Right-wing commentator and writer Ann Coulter questioned the arrest over the possibility of deporting Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University student who was arrested for pro-Palestinian protests on campuses last year. He was arrested by ICE over the weekend, and even Trump made a social media post mentioning his name, blowing the issue out of proportion as his administration is trying to make an example out of him. For a while, nobody knew where he even was. He was just disappeared. Pretty sickening, actually. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said, I still can't say that with keep a straight face. He said visas or green cards of such Hamas supporters will be revoked so that they can be deported. And here we go again. Hamas supporter, show me. What did he say that said, I support Hamas. I support the actions that Hamas takes. I support terrorist acts against the Israeli people. All right. If you support Intifada, if you support resistance, if you support fighting back, that doesn't make you a terrorist. That doesn't make you a Hamas supporter. All right. If Hamas is the only group in town, that makes it awfully difficult, but it doesn't make you a Hamas supporter. Now, Khalil's lawyer, Amy Greer, said Khalil is a green card holder. He was arrested even after she mentioned the legality of his citizenship to the administration. Now, Ann Coulter, of all people, said there's almost no one I don't want to deport. I have to admire her honesty. There's almost no one I don't want to deport, but unless they've committed a crime, isn't this a violation of the First Amendment? Yeah, absolutely it is. And the fact that she gets that, and our own government and the university, Columbia University, does not get that. Wow. Now, Mahmoud Khalil completed his master's degree from Columbia University in December. Before Columbia, he held multiple roles in international development, including with the UK's Foreign, Commonwealth, and Development Office. He studied for his bachelor's degree in computer science from Lebanese American University in Beirut. He was born in Syria. He's a green card holder. He's a U.S. citizen. He's married to an American. And he was at the forefront of the pro-Palestine protests that rocked the campuses last year. I don't know if they really rocked the campus. They were there. You could hear them. You could see them. But the rocking of the campus came when cops were sent in and when cops were violent and when cops even shot their gun inside a damn building. Yeah, there was an accident, but for God's sake, people, you clearly don't know what you're doing. He was suspended by his university, was then reinstated, and Trump said his arrest is the first of many to come. Now, a federal judge in New York has blocked the effort to deport him for the time being. So that's a little bit of good news, but boy, this is scary, because this kind of thing is happening all over the place. I just saw an article right before airtime from the New York Times. Headline, Washington Post columnist resigns after the Washington Post spiked criticism of Jeff Bezos. And if you don't know, Jeff Bezos is the owner of the Washington Post and also Amazon.
That's like a whole column, not like just a political cartoon.
Yeah, I'll get to that. But Ruth Marcus is a longtime columnist at the Post. And she said the publisher refused to run her critique of the new focus for the paper's opinion section. So this goes several levels because she's criticizing a new policy that basically makes it harder to criticize. And I think she proved her point admirably because even doing that got the column to not run. You're not allowed to criticize this person. Look, if you own a newspaper, you have to realize it's a newspaper that you own, all right? And people are going to have opinions, and they're not always going to be your opinion. Now, you could just have a Soviet-style newspaper, fine, and have everything, you know, be the party line, but that doesn't really work in this country very well. It really doesn't. So that's something that's happening. Okay, Voice of America journalists are facing investigations for comments about Trump. Yeah, they're the federally funded broadcaster to the world, shortwave. They've long prided themselves on serving as an accurate and fair source of news and on being independent of whichever president and party are in power in the United States.
You will not hear them in this country.
Well, you can. If you have a shortwave radio, well, you can find them, but they're not supposed to be broadcasting
they're not
the United States.
Yeah, they're not originating content for our audience.
The one of Voice of America's highest profile journalists, Stephen Herman, has been placed on an extended excused absence pending a human resources investigation. That's according to a copy of a letter reviewed by the New York Times. He confirmed receiving a letter which said the investigation was into whether his social media activity has undermined VOA's audience's perceptions of his objectivity and or credibility of VOA and its news operations. Now, weeks earlier, he had come under fire from the Trump administration when he cited a quote on social media from an anti-corruption watchdog group criticizing cutbacks at the United States Agency for International Development by DOGE, by Elon Musk. You know, basically citing something that goes against the government line. Suspended for that. And how about this? Tony Doris said he never shied away from controversy during his lengthy career at the Palm Beach Post, Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper in the backyard of Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. He investigated local government, digging into city affairs in West Palm Beach over two decades at the paper, most recently as editorial page editor. He didn't expect his career there to end over a cartoon. But Gannett, the largest newspaper company in the United States and the owner of the Palm Beach Post, fired Mr. Doris last month after he decided to publish a cartoon about the war in Gaza. The cartoon set off a backlash in Palm Beach, including a rebuke from a local Jewish group that claimed the cartoon was, get ready, anti-Semitic, resulting in a quick response from Gannett's senior editors. The cartoon, according to Mr. Doris, was anti-war, not anti-Semitic. He added that he thought Gannett's senior editors lacked the fortitude to stand up for their journalists. They're afraid of their shadow, he said, adding, I think it speaks to a misunderstanding or failure to engage with the mission of an editorial page. So, yeah, I can't really describe the cartoon, but you can probably find it online. I can't describe it because it's not described in front of me. But basically, it was... I think well within the boundaries of what is acceptable and should be allowed. Anyway, the point is, as we go into our last minute here, speak out, speak up, and realize you have the right to free speech.
Yeah, challenge this sort of contained environment they're trying to create. They want to be able to, like, put boundaries and limits on every conversation, everything. The more you just sort of disappear that and confuse it, get it an active dialogue, put challenging thoughts out there, make it uncomfortable. That is what is needed in discourse and not the opposite of what is being wielded.
Our email address is otw@2600.com. We will be back again next week with more discussion of what's been going on in the world, and who knows what it'll be then.